This is Must Know People. I'm John Ryan with you here, and we're actually live at 1730 Tap House here in Carroll because we thought, let's get out of the studio, let's go do something a little bit live somewhere. So Matt Wietrich is here, one of our special guests, one of the first guinea pigs on the show.
Well, I'm happy to be one of them. Thanks for having me, John.
You know exactly why you're here, right?
Well, because I'm not shy about talking.
Yeah,
is that it?
I could literally, if I have to go to the bathroom, I know I could get up and come back and you'll still be talking.
Certainly could do that. You're welcome. Yes.
Absolutely. You might know Matt as the naturalist from Carroll County. You just spent, what, 10?
15.
15 years
doing that.
That's crazy. I know.
That was great.
You were always walking through the radio station with snakes, owls, whatever you had that day.
Whatever we could do to get out and get people wandering around a little bit and inspired a little bit. So, yeah, it was a great partnership, and I know it continues to be for you guys in Carroll County Conservation. So we really appreciated the venue to be able to get the word out.
How'd you get into all that? I mean, were you like a kid that brought snakes into your stuffed frogs in your pocket?
That's a great question. And I think that the, you know, we often say, you know, people can watch shows about TV, they can take school classes about TV, they can read books, but it's those experiences you have as a kid especially that make you into that person as an adult. And that definitely rings true for me, from my grandparents taking us fishing and camping, and I was in scouts and things like that. So just a lot of experiences outdoors, to not be afraid of the outdoors, but then be very curious. I definitely consider myself a very curious person. So
I will say, when you walked in with a snake, everybody backed off. They're like, what in the world? So not afraid of any of that stuff.
Right. No, that is. And it's
anything you were afraid of, by the way?
Not really. It's interesting because, you know, one of the scariest, dangerous, our most dangerous animals is mosquito.
Yeah. Okay.
those are the animals that are transmitting the most problems. So no, I'm not really afraid of any animals at all, I guess. No, that's especially here in Iowa, or at least in this part of Iowa, there's no venomous snakes. And so even the thing with snakes and bats is it's almost never on our terms. It's always a surprise. Yeah. And that's always one of the problems, you know.
Yeah. And they're the good animals you want to have around. So.
That's right. Very misunderstood.
Now, where did you grow up? You didn't grow up here in Carroll or around the Jefferson area, did you?
No, I grew up in southeast Iowa in Fairfield.
Okay.
Yeah, up till fifth grade, I was in Osceola, south central Iowa. But then fifth grade through post high school, graduated from Fairfield. So southeast Iowa, quite a ways from here. And went to Iowa State then and just kind of hung out in this area and eventually stuck around here. And I actually have family ties in the Grand Junction and Greene County area, too.
Oh, so that's kind of a natural tie.
Well, it was strictly coincidental. It really had nothing to do with anything at all, aside from getting this job over in Carroll.
Did you get over to the Maharishi Temple over there?
Well, it's funny because if anybody knows anything about Fairfield, it's Maharishi.
That is about the only thing I know about Fairfield.
Yeah.
I do know we had an assistant news director, Steve Smith. He was went over there to work at the radio station. He was eventually the general manager, eventually the mayor of Fairfield.
Okay.
So, I know important people around the state, Matt. I'm well connected here.
The thing that I love about Fairfield, especially as an adult looking back, it is I would argue probably the most culturally diverse community in the state per capita. It's about, it's about the size of Carroll, but you've got worldwide influences there. You've got people literally from all around the world coming to be a part of the Transcendental Meditation movement or going to Maharishi University there, like you mentioned. And you see it on their town square. You see all these outside influences of these cool restaurants. And I mean, they've got... How many Indian restaurants does Carroll County have?
Let me see. At last check. I don't know if they're doing a big business here in Carroll County.
So I think there's three or four that I know of now in the same size community. Yeah. So you've got a lot of diversity of restaurants and bookstores and stuff like that. So it's a different community for Iowa.
About the strangest one I know, up in Early, they just opened a Cuban restaurant in Early.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
If you drive through on the highway there, that's about as exotic as it gets here. So
that's pretty great.
If you're dying for a great Cuban sandwich, stop on by. They're pretty good.
Early, okay. Yeah. Noted.
So you got here to Carroll County. You spent 15 years as the naturalist.
Yeah.
Man, you had to love that job.
It was a great job, something very, very passionate about, and really was, you know, it's one of those you get up and you look forward to going to work and figuring out ways to inspire people to, you know, care about the environment around them. And really it's, you know, I'm fascinated by a lot lot of the things. There's pretty things. There's really interesting ways that plants and animals make a living. But at the end of the day, I would tell people, you know, even if none of that's interesting to you, mm-hmm. you should care, because the health of the environment is a reflection of the health of where we can be and in our own health. So if you want to grow old with, you know, the ability to not fight diseases and other issues, I mean, having a healthy, clean environment is why you should care about it. So, but we, you know, you can teach people, but it's getting people that feeling, those emotional connections yeah. that really drive them to make, okay, I can make a little extra effort to recycle, or I can think about how to reduce my consumption of this or that. So it's kind of like, how do we minimize it every day that we're kind of being a jerk to the planet, if you will, you know.
Now, one thing I always thought was very cool about you, and I don't see it in other naturalists, you really went out of your way to do different things. You had the bird watching thing that you mm-hmm. took up to Minneapolis and Minnesota. You got into the Raptors yeah. Program pretty heavily and yeah. all that. So, yeah. I mean, you yeah. really went out of your way to do presentations to be on the public.
Well, appreciate that. That's, yeah. In the live raptor thing you're talking about, Carroll County has a really neat resource here with the organization called SOAR, Saving mm-hmm. Our Avian Resources, and Kay Newman. And getting those live birds of prey out to show people. I was just looking in my Facebook memories today and from some pictures from SOAR, and I had an eagle on my fist and a snowy owl yeah. on my fist. And really, those are really, really impactful teachers. I mean, I could talk raptor adaptations all day, but to see a live bird of prey right there is really mm-hmm. impactful. So Kay does a lot of great work here in the county and statewide. She's really well known. And, you know, if there's ever, you know how many number of calls that we'd get through the years of people having an injured bird or a baby, this or that, and Kay was always there. And so we were great partners, and always loved. I would have done it daily if we yeah. could. It was really impactful. So
how would you rate yeah. Carroll County as far as what the naturalist was doing and, you know, like the conservation in this yeah. area? How would you rate it?
That's a good question. So just a little bit of bigger picture look. The state of Iowa has about 100 naturalists, less than this has been a few years since I've known. So, you know, 99 counties, some counties are small enough that they don't have a naturalist. In some counties, mm-hmm. Story County, I think they have 3 or 4 naturalists. So it depends. But I think Carroll's doing a pretty darn good job. The fact that there is a nature center in a county this really small, honestly,
yeah.
Is really a nice reflection of the community getting behind. And I know that was largely, if not entirely, privately funded. I don't think the supervisors had to do a lot with that. So that really is a neat reflection of the county supporting the County Conservation Board here. And I know there's some great staff folks that I worked with over the years, and a lot of great volunteers. That's a lot of volunteer work is the key to a lot of things I've been learning yeah. in the last couple of years, especially. But we saw that over here in Carroll, and I think a lot of great things are happening. And now there's 2 naturalists they've got full time, it sounds like. So
wow.
I loved learning that for them. That's really great to know that, to kind of divide and conquer a little bit more and spread that love. So
needed 2 to fill your shoes.
maybe they realized he wasn't quite doing what we wanted. We need another person in there. I don't know. No, but no, that's good. I'm glad they made that change. And I just learned yesterday that Green County supervisor just approved for Green County to get a naturalist now.
Oh,
so,
right.
So we're adding to the naturalist list here in the states, which is cool.
Well, you seem to do a lot of things, so maybe you can take on that role too.
Yeah, I did. I said people when they were, there was a group of people we were in, and they kind of looked at me funny. I was like, I'm not interested.
Don't worry.
I'm not switching roles again.
But. Not yeah. your guy. I yeah. got what I like when I'm going on here.
yeah.
So what was it about? In 15 years, it'd have been easy to probably just keep on doing what you're doing, right?
Yeah, and I definitely found myself falling into that, especially with our summer camps and stuff. You know, we had some stuff going on that worked well, and you kind of find yourself falling into patterns and stuff. And we'd try to shift things around, even going to do our monthly school programming. You know, it's kind of easy to get into the. I tried to tie stuff in that was, you know, so what was relevant that month of the year, mm-hmm. and so like. Out for February school programs, we would do how animals show they love each other, right? Which is a whole different talk if you were doing it with adults. But for school age kids, it was, you know,
it was all PG, folks.
It was all PG. Very PG. It was great. It was, you know, prairie chickens and how they dance. And we showed a clip of like the birds of paradise and all the elaborate displays that the male birds would do. But also how animals talk a lot with scent and smell. And anyway, we kind of talked about all that stuff.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, it would be easy to kind of get into those routines. I mean, I try to shake it up just for my own, keep my own brain fresh and things. But, Yeah, and the thing about being a naturalist is you're never going to know everything there is. You know, I'm assuming if you're a tax professional, you're probably going to reach a peak at some point. You're going to know most of your stuff, but with naturalists, there's no way to know all of the things going on out in nature. Plus, we're continuing to learn. I mean, we don't know everything that's going on out there. Scientists are still making discoveries. Heck, they're still discovering new species sometimes. Mm-hmm. So, and then the interaction of, it's not just how an ecosystem functions, but how do people, you know, we're animals, we're part of all this. How does our influence impact all this too? So that's ever evolving, and you're never going to reach the end of your knowledge base here. So, which is cool and exciting, yeah. A little intimidating sometimes, but you know, most naturalists, I know a lot of great friends who over the years of naturalists can know a little bit about just about everything. And like you mentioned, I love birding and bird watching and things. Birds are the most accessible animal, I think, you know, no matter what time of year it is, no matter where you go. That it is, if you want to never be bored again, get into bird watching. You
know? Is that where dinosaurs went? They went to being birds.
That, you know, the more.
Can I trust Jurassic Park on that?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that's one of those, the more we discover, the more we study fossils, the more we are sure that birds evolved from dinosaurs. Yes.
All right.
Yes.
So there you go.
So it's really cool because, you know, people are like, gosh, blue jays are jerks, aren't they? Like, I don't know. I think it's kind of some cool dinosaur behavior you see there, really.
Now, you got to the point where I guess you wanted to make a change, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
15 years in, you're
yes,
like,
yes.
I can totally understand that. I mean, I've been at the radio station for 30 years, and I love what I do, and you loved what you
did. Yes.
You could have gone on doing that. Mm-hmm. I chose to keep doing this because it's what I love, and I love doing this. I just love talking to people. Why do you want to make a change?
Well, it was a labor of love, a very passion-filled job, and it was a good lesson for me of work-life balance, and I found myself getting fairly burnt out towards the end. And, you know, gosh, here in these...
I'm assuming it wasn't the animals that burned you out.
No, collectively, it kind of was getting to that point, and something is going to have to give there. So it had a lot to do with the fact that... people, you know, constantly reach out to me in any hour of the day about I've got this problem with it. I found this questions and stuff. You know, it's just interesting that the difference in perspective, like you wouldn't reach out to your doctor at 8:30 at night or whatever, you know, things like that. And I was happy to do it, but it also was like, I got to step away from some of this. I still love it. Still very passionate. Still do some, you know, naturalist type stuff in my free time or volunteer things that I do otherwise. But no, I think that it's a good lesson in trying to keep that work-life balance a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And it was something, again, that I was very, very, very passionate about. My heart was really, really into it. And so, you know, probably unrealistic expectations of myself, kind of a perfectionist, and wanting to change the world so much, and that's just not how it works, you know. Mm-hmm. And so you get gung-ho out of college and like, oh, you're going to take on the world, you're just going to kick some butt, and then you have a family and that changes your perspective a little bit. And so there's this weird cycle of how you grow up as a young professional and how all that changes. And gosh, you know, work's important, but it's not cool. I don't have to prove myself now anymore, and now I've got little versions of myself at home that I need to be able to.
I was going to say, do you have kids that go, yeah, Dad, we know that about this bird? You know,
yes. Well, it's pretty great because I have basically all teenagers at this point. So let me say, I am the least cool person on the planet. We have a blended family, and we have six between the two of us. So we've got a sixth grader, seventh grader, eighth grader, ninth grader, 11th grader, and freshman in college. So five girls and a boy. And like I said, I am the least cool person in existence and the least correct person. I'm get corrected a lot about everything. So, but they do absorb stuff. My goal is to never push them too hard into, like, especially bird watching or nature stuff, but expose them. And in our, we have we have a family Snapchat group, and so my daughter had sent a picture like, "Dad, what was this bird?" It was a, and my son said, "That's a gray blue heron." so he came in and identified it, which is great. So it always like warms my heart.
Proud
a little
dad
bit.
Moment.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, somebody's campaigning to be my favorite today. So
isn't that crazy? How my family does that too. We have a Snapchat. That's how we communicate best. A lot of times, yep. Isn't it?
It's really
great. All of our kids are grown and out of the house and things like that. So yeah, it's Snapchat that we really talk to each other.
It's funny, and I don't really use Snapchat a ton, but somehow we got started on this, and that's what we do. So I guess we kind of follow the kids' lead on that a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's there. Well, we'll meet them where they're happy to communicate, because boy, we're not the ones they want to spend the time with a lot right now. So yeah. we're happy to communicate in any way we can.
Any way you can stay in touch is a good
that's
way.
Right,
so
that's right.
So you found your way over to Jefferson. Well, you were from Jefferson. You lived in Jefferson.
I've lived
in
Jefferson the entirety of my time here working.
Why is
in
that?
Well, at the time,
you were Carroll County naturalist.
I know I was. So at the time when I took this job, I had lived in Ames and commuted from Ames for a few months, and then my relationship status at the time, my wife worked in Des Moines. And so moving all the way to Carroll was pretty darn far to ask her to drive to Des Moines.
Yeah.
And so Jefferson was kind of a middle ground, and I'll drive a half hour. There's still a ways for her to drive to Des Moines. So it was kind of a happy medium for us there. And I've really enjoyed Jefferson. And once, you know, my kids got school age and really got more into the community, and my community involvement has skyrocketed the last 10 or so years, really. So,
well, I was going to ask you about that because, I mean, you're not just involved a little with things. You dive in.
Correct.
And you jump in with both feet and both arms and everything. what was the job you went to in Jefferson?
Yep. So we have, we are a Main Street community, and we can talk more about that in a second. So our Main Street community and our Chamber of Commerce combined about 3 years ago. And so I'm the director of that organization now. And when I first started there a couple years ago, I was their other staff person that we have is called our events and tourism coordinator. So that's what I was originally hired for. And then just a couple months after that, became the executive director. And it's been great. And my people-y skills are really, really come into play there. Mm-hmm. And but I've also been on city council for about 6 years as well. So the community involvement part of it has been going on for quite a while, and a lot of volunteering here and there. And it's just, we know it's a small enough community that we're half the size of Carroll, but really Carroll's also obviously a very small community, all things considered. But these size communities, it's really great to be in, and you can really make a big splash as far as when you put your time in, you know you're really making a difference.
Yeah.
And the other side of that is, you know, it's easy for people to sit back and complain about things, but stepping in and being a part of the change is where I decided I wanted to be versus a sit back and complain about things guy.
Yeah, I want to take a minute to say thanks to 1730 Tap House for hosting us here as we're sitting here chatting with Matt Waitrick. You're with Main Street Jefferson, executive director of that. All of your time you spent presenting animals to classes, doing all that, man, that's just like prep work you're doing now.
Public speaking is you know, when they pull people across the country, that's always one of their number one fears, mm-hmm. right? It's not spiders and snakes. I mean, those are up there, but public speaking seems to be the underlying fear.
And you're
folks.
An expert in all that stuff.
I always tell people, and that was whenever we had interns, you know, working over here in Carroll, or job shadowers or whatever, I always harped on taking advantage of speech classes. And that's, the kids hate speech class, you know, but those are really great. Your communication skills are really important. Writing too. You got to get beyond just how you would text your friends. You know, being a good communicator is everything, really is mm-hmm. huge.
I tell everybody that comes to the station, job shadows, like, if you want to get into this kind of business or anything in communications or public relations, get into those speech classes, do the plays, mm-hmm. Get out in
that's
front
a good,
of a crowd
that's great.
And just, you know, be out in front and be comfortable with that.
That's a great tip too. Being in theater, well, that would really get you out of your box for sure.
It really is. I was the ghost of Christmas Present in my high school, my one and only high school
fantastic.
Play.
Did you have to sing?
No, thankfully they would have paid me not to, but I got to wear makeup and we'd meet the crowd afterwards, and a little kid came by me and he was scared of me, and I thought that was kind of cool. In my ghost of Christmas Present makeup.
That's awesome. No, that you're just right. Just to finish that up, the ability to communicate is really huge, and being I think part of that too, being empathetic is really a great thing to develop as well. And I don't know how you build that in folks, but gosh, that starts at a young age, I suppose. But being an empathetic communicator really is a really powerful thing. The classic book of How to Win Friends and Influence People is a great book to just
Mr. Dale Carnegie.
Oh man, it's so good. It's my grandfather sent that to all of us grandkids and said this was an influential book in my life, and really hope you read it.
So. Did you ever take it, the class?
I did not. No, I know like that's a whole deal, and I did not. But
I did. I took the class through the radio station once I got here. Mm-hmm. This is, we're talking way back in the mid-1990s or something like that. Great class. Anybody gets a chance, if it's still around, I don't even know if it's still around, but that is a great one to take.
Yeah.
They did teach me one little odd trick, how to memorize things. So if you did like from 1 to 20, you visualize 1 run, 2 zoo, 3 tree. I remember all of these things. So you picture that image in a mental thing. And yeah, you can recall lots of things. And so it's a fascinating class to take. But
that's great.
So you took your talents over to Jefferson.
Yep.
And you guys are kind of crushing it. You've gotten a lot of things going over there, don't you? Including the newest award.
Well, we are, yes. So part of that is this balance of, you know, not trying to sound braggadocious, but telling your story. And so let me talk about Main Street for a second, then we can talk about some of those accolades you're talking about. The Main Street program is a nationwide thing. There's about 1,200 Main Street communities in the country. And in Iowa, there's about 50. And so you go through this very rigorous application process to become a Main Street community. And then you work under the Main Street Iowa office, which is through the IEDA, Iowa Economic Development Authority, which is, you know, works right under the governor. And so they're state staff. And then, you know, locally, your community is, you have your own nonprofit, which is your Main Street organization. And so our name currently is Jefferson Matters. It used to be Jefferson Matters, Main Street, and Chamber Community, but obviously that was right after we combined, but now we're Jefferson Matters. And so we work under this framework of the Main Street organization. Mm-hmm. And it's...
Can I interrupt for a second? What is the difference between Main Street organizations and like a Chamber of Commerce?
Yes. So the Main Street program is rooted in historic preservation. So community and economic development through historic preservation.
Gotcha.
And it's through the National Historic Trust is kind of where it was born. And so, for example, Jefferson is one of, I think, only 4 communities in the state of Iowa that has all 4 sides of its historic downtown still intact. So that's kind of fun.
That's interesting. Yeah. I would have thought there had been a ton of them.
Yeah. And so, I mean, buildings get dilapidated. I mean, most of these buildings are 100 years old or more. And so one of the big things about being a Main Street organization, or excuse me, a Main Street community, is that you are partners with the city. And the city of Jefferson has been a great partner, very progressive, and investing a lot of, you have like TIF dollars and things that go into the downtown, and doing a lot of facade renovations. And there's, without the city's involvement, there's definitely some of those buildings would have toppled. There's no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. So bringing those back to life so a business can come be in them. A lot of them have second story living options, you know, and that's a big thing right now is upper story living, and there's been some new apartment projects downtown. So that's kind of the root of it, and there's a whole framework, and you go through an accreditation up every couple of years. I mean, there's really a good structure that's the backbone of it.
Okay.
And a lot of the stuff that's happening in downtown Jefferson is certainly, we're year 12 of being a Main Street community, and it's been a big part of I would say the successes that people see.
Sure.
And so we work, you know, we're doing tourism stuff, we're doing community events, which I love also, but also economic development stuff with you know, trying to welcome businesses and help businesses get promoted and beautifying the downtown. And there is a geographic area that is our Main Street district. So you draw, that's part of your application process. You delineate the area, and it's not just a square, it's a little beyond that. But we could talk a long time about Main Street program itself, but that's a good kind of nutshell of what it is. But yeah, so
back to some of the awards and some of the accolades.
We're kind of in award season right now, and a couple
it's
weeks...
It's like Oscar season.
It is that. And so a couple weeks ago, the Travel Iowa, which is also through the IEDA, had their tourism conference, and part of that is they do an awards luncheon. And we had nominated two... Or I guess we nominated ourselves for 2 different awards. One was the Centennial, which we'll come back to in a second, for Outstanding dining business, and the other one was just for community as a whole. And so we won both of those, and it's the tagline is, or the title is, Outstanding Community, which is one of the bigger ones. And they delineate between community sizes. So basically over 10,000, you're in the kind of metro area.
Yeah.
And if you're in it, there's a couple caveats. If you're in a community or in a county where it's really big county, you know, but basically most of Iowa is under that 10,000, you know? Mm-hmm. And this isn't just for Main Street communities. This is for anything. So or for everyone. So winning those two is really big. The community-wide, basically outstanding tourism community for 2024 is a huge thing that we'll probably tout for a while. We should anyway. And the outstanding dining business for the Centennial is down on the square. And that's a whole story in itself. The Register and KCCI and a dozen or more different websites and news outlets and things have come to do stories about the Centennial. And that's on the northwest corner of downtown. It used to be Angie's Tea Garden, if people have been over there to remember that, and there was a huge water line break that damaged the ruined the whole entire building. And so that left a big cavity in downtown Jefferson.
Yep.
That's a really neat little unique restaurant that people would come from out of town. You know, we come eat. They usually shop around and do other stuff. So a group of ladies that would love to go there, they kind of decided, you know, this is, again, a big cavity in our downtown, and we really should do something. Like, who's going to do something about that?
And that's the thing in town. It's like, well, somebody should do something
about
it. They did.
And so they kind of just looked at each other and said, well, why not us? Mm-hmm. And they have an LLC. Why not us?
Very cool.
Why not us? And so it's a group of over 70 women contributed $5,000 to going into fixing this building up. And now it's this amazing restaurant that they found this local young woman who's the chef and owner that rents the space from them. They're getting ready to have apartments upstairs. The before and after, we could do an hour just about why not us. And so when Lisa Bluter said, why not us, last year in the Final Four, I think.
And nicely so, done. Way to slip in the Hawkeyes.
It was, right? It was, yeah. And so, and then Ray Gunn made a Why Not Us shirt. So a lot of those ladies went and bought a Why Not Us shirt from Ray Gunn, even the Cyclone mm-hmm. fans. Anyway, it's a great story, but the food is fantastic too. And that really is what's keeping it going. So we're excited for Sarah Ostrander is the chef and owner. We're really excited for her to have that. And she'll see a big uptick in traffic, I think, with these new acknowledgments.
Yeah, so. Sure. I hope so. there's a couple things I want to talk about too, because Carol just had Ragbri roll through, of course, mm-hmm. 50th anniversary of it. Mm-hmm. You guys had Ragbri come through a couple years ago.
We did. So, and then we had Ragbri last year also. After you, they were a pass-through for us.
That's right.
So you got them well-rested and all partied up over here and then sent them our direction. It was awesome.
Do you think that things like that are a huge boon for a town, or is it just kind of a burden? Because there was a lot of people that were on both sides of that fence.
Yeah, there always has been. We had it in 2018, and my wife and I were the
chairs.
Yep. Yep, the chairs. And so that was essentially our life from February when that ball dropped through, you know, the event in July, right? Yeah, July. And yeah, so we know all about the work that goes into it. But and so then this year as a pass-through town, definitely a fraction of work of the work. But I mean, I don't know. I unquestionably will say it's a positive, and I understand the concerns that people have. But I think there is a lot of work. There's an extra burden on different infrastructure parts for the community. But I think, just like everything, it's important to kind of keep that bigger picture, those secondary and tertiary impacts that events like that have. Mm-hmm. I know we have had, in Jefferson anyway, some people that have ended up moving to Jefferson through Ragbri connections and the coffee shop downtown.
You know that for sure.
I do know that.
Okay.
100%. Yep.
All right.
So, I mean, that's just a one or two small example thing, but but essentially putting your community on the map for some of these people, and I think if you really do it well and plant that seed while they're here to give them reasons to want to come back. And they're just literally passing through or spending the night only. But man, make that impact while you've got the biggest marketing opportunity, tourism opportunity you're ever going to have in your community in Iowa. You have tens of thousands, whatever your number is going to be that year. There's no better way to market your community. So how are you going to utilize that, you know? And I know I've heard all the all the remarks on all sides. So I'm very well aware of what you're referring to.
And there's very strong feelings on sides of not wanting to do it.
Understood. Right. Yeah, absolutely. And to those people, I would suggest stay home for a day or two or minimize your work around town. But boy, the people who are 100% volunteering their time are very passionate about it and feel that it's a great impact. And I mean, it's a lot, no doubt about it. And last year with it being the big anniversary was, I mean, I was trying to really explain to people, and I'm sure it happened in here in Carroll, but what an honor to be asked when they knew it was going to be their biggest crowd and they wanted to showcase Iowa the best way they could. And that you got to be part of that because they were happy with what you've done in the past and knew that it would be a good experience for the writers. I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's they took a little bit out of the way because the original 50th, I think, included Storm Lake, and I don't know if they went through Storm Lake.
I can't remember the route either. It was halfway close to the original. There was a lot of detail going into like how many miles it ended up being and all that. So they really were thinking through all of that stuff. So I'm actually headed back there this weekend because it's their meeting for all the new people that are going to be hosting this year. And so they asked me to come back to talk about the past two towns.
Well, that's shocking.
Well, I'm noticing a trend here. Well, I was like, well, that's a great honor. I appreciate that. The director, Matt Phippen, had called and said, like, cool. Yeah, love to. I don't know what benefit I can provide you, but I appreciate being asked.
If Matt called you right now and said, hey, we want Jefferson next year to do an overnight, I don't answer that.
No. Well, the thing is, when they came for their follow-up visit, they said, we'll see you soon. Like, next time it's through the middle of the state, we'll probably see you soon.
It's a pretty easy route. I mean, that's the natural connections going on.
And I think that, we have that classic small town square in Jefferson, which really lends itself nicely to putting that. I mean, and you guys make it work here without that really well, too, with the space you have. But that small town square vibe where you can just basically that's your central hub. And it is. Yeah. And in 18, we convinced local law enforcement and local officials to let us have the open concept versus having a little beer jail, we'd called it, that we'd had at our Bell Tower Festival. Yep. And boy, it sure is. And we've kept that through our Bell Tower Festival and other events. And it really is the community's benefited from that a lot and makes everything a little bit better. So there's an instance where Rag Race certainly had a positive impact on our community in Jefferson.
And in weird ways, you just never know what's going to come out.
That's right.
So the casino.
Yeah.
How big is that for you guys as far as tax dollars, things like that? I mean, it's got to make it just a huge, huge impact. And, some people will knock that as well. Mm-hmm. They're not in favor of the casino being in their town. But, you guys have embraced it, take it?
So, when it first passed, it had to be a supermajority, that 60%. And then it's after, is it 6 or 7 years, you have to have a second vote. It's one more vote, and it's never not passed in Iowa. But it's your community's opportunity to say, well, this has been an epic disaster, and we do not want it here. And then so the casino has to basically vacate that space for a certain amount of years before it could come back. But it's never happened. Yeah. We just had this vote, I believe, 2 years ago now, and we passed it with the highest percentage of yes that any of them have ever had in Iowa. And through my duties on city council, I sit on this board as an ex officio member. So that board is called Grow Green Gaming Corporation, and that's the QSO that handles the gaming revenue and how to deviate it out. So the night before we're recording this, actually last night, we had the big awards night. And so this is where 5% of Wild Rose's gaming revenue goes to this QSO and gives it out to the communities within the county, the county itself, the school districts in the county. And then
what kind of numbers are we talking about?
We'll get to that in a second. So this board, on their own accord, chose to also contribute money to the contiguous counties, including Carroll. And that's not a requirement by the state. We just decided to do that to be good neighbors and share the love and
be a more regional aspect of it.
And so I can tell you last night that five counties touched Green County, and every one of them received $53,500 for their community foundation. So that's not a small number, you know. And through the years, there's the collective. We had those collective dollars on to show people last night. I don't remember that off the top of my head, but. You know, the city of Jeff, and so the communities get X amount of dollars per capita within the county, and it caps at 50,000. So Jefferson itself gets 50,000 every year to go towards special projects. A side note too, the casino has the hotel associated with it, so that's increased hotel motel money that we get to use for different tourism things too. So that's a second kind of extra added dollar to the city government to be able to fund out. But after you do all of these. Contiguous county dollars, the community dollars, the school, all that. Then you have X amount of dollars to give out for competitive grants. And that's what's really fun. So you see people now dreaming of projects that would have never even come across their mind before.
Yeah.
And for example, one of the Main Street projects we did last year, the Jefferson Matters, one of our teams, our Tower View team, has been renovating three of the alleyways downtown. They're pedestrian alleys off our square, made them into public art places. Imagination Alley.
Little pocket parks.
Yeah, it's kind of a pocket park per se. Yep, that's a good use. The West Alley is called Imagination Alley. It got $100,000 last year.
And this the one project.
Just that one project. So to do it to the level we're doing it, Jefferson, Iowa isn't going to get to do that. We're just not going to. Those funds aren't there, you know. So these type of things are fun. Where we're doing a lot of things, like the medical center gets new things that it wouldn't have had, or new updated ambulance, and differently. Scranton gets a fire truck, and Grand Junction gets new medical equipment for their for their fire station, stuff like that. You know,
schools have benefited.
Schools,
huge.
Look at that
new school right there on the highway. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. I have not been in it yet.
$4.5 million went to specifically the new gymnasium and performing arts theater, and they are both very beautiful. And so now we can host. We hosted would have been a regionals for high school basketball sectionals. I don't remember which level that would have been, but it was a doubleheader here.
Blankman was over
winter.
There. For
yeah,
it,
this
think,
winter. Yeah, because that's right. Because Kemper was one of the teams. That's correct. And the gym packed. I mean, I've never seen so many cars at the school as there was that night. So, I mean, there's an economic impact right there. There's kind of a tertiary effect for this actually happening. And it's the third time for that school bond to go through. And Grow Green's partnership to contribute that $4.5 million made it a lot easier. Because one of the pushbacks earlier was, well, we don't need a new gym. I don't want my tax dollars to go to a new gym. And so, hey, we'll cover the gym. Your money is not going to that.
Yep.
That's a heck of an
impact. Argument right there.
It really is. It is a neat, and it's just one of those things that from the outside, when people are looking to move, like got a new school, and I think Carroll and Jefferson both this whole region, these are great places. It's tough to attract young singles because it's hard to meet young singles, in places like this. But damn, it is a heck of a place to raise a family, a great place to retire. And I think those are, especially looking at what we think about for city council and whatnot, those are the demographics that really gear our communities towards. And a lot of the Grow Green gaming money has gone to a lot of those things. The pickleball court committee was the big winner last night.
Now you're talking. If you can build pickleball courts, okay.
We were going to.
I was going to ask you, there's no conflict between you being the Main Street director and you being on city council?
Yes. So it's not a city position, right? And if there's, when anytime anything comes up where there's a council vote on, if there's funding associated with it or approving something, then I will abstain from that. Now, some communities, their chamber director or their Main Street director is a city employee. And I'm on the record well before ever being employed by our Main Street folks. I think that's a really good call. Like, you want to attract better candidates, keep them for longer, give them those city benefits. And if that were ever to happen, I would be glad to step down from city council duties. But I mean, in a small community, there's so many different hats, so many people wear, and it ends up being the people that are involved are really involved, which is obviously myself. But you're right. There's some of that for some people. Like, we try to be as transparent as possible, and it's easy to just simply abstain on on some things.
Yeah. What's coming up next for Jefferson? Is there anything big that you can talk about that you got going on there?
Good
is there?
Question. Well, I guess a follow-up to our award season, the Main Street Iowa Development Awards are coming up in Des Moines here on the 19th of April. And we, I can tell you we'll be on stage a couple times for a couple of awards. I know that,
which
is really cool. And so we'll add to the trophy case. But one of the things that we want to continue to do better is to do our storytelling. And there's a lot of neat things that when people actually come to Jefferson and they're like, I'm really kind of surprised by this. This is a beautiful, welcoming downtown and all the things to do, and I'm really surprised. So
you just got to get them downtown.
Exactly. Just got to get them to the community. And it's not even just downtown, because that's our bread and butter, but getting in there, that's exactly it. So we are hoping to add another staff person here. That's in the works. I think it's okay to say that now, and be our essentially communications director, our storyteller position. And so that's really getting where you're branding yourself and you're nailing all the social media stuff and really putting yourself on the map and having a consistent feel on your social media and on your website so they're all really alive. And being that I'm more than just Jefferson County wide, especially, but which will be just regionally beneficial as well.
Plus, you need somebody to come in that really knows that
kind
of stuff.
Right.
Because if you don't know Snapchat, TikTok, any of that stuff, it is hard.
Folks that
didn't grow up with it don't understand it. It's near impossible to put out something that's going to attract any attention.
Yeah, and be consistent with it and have it look professional. And it's not just, you know, somebody sitting on their couch that's volunteering at night. And we do have that, which is great. And then we do have a lot of amazing volunteers, but somebody who's a little more professionally educated on it and can be very consistent, and that's their dedicated job to do that.
AKA younger.
Exactly. That's right. That's ideally probably the candidate is going to be younger than myself and will be really good at that stuff. So I'm hoping to see ourselves grow a little bit as far as that. And I asked the Main Street Iowa coordinator, the head of Main Street Iowa, I asked him recently, I said, you know, I'm kind of looking at wanting to grow us a little bit more and even maybe add a staff person and do this more storytelling, because Main Street is very big on telling your story. And I said, am I nuts? You know, we're a town of 4,500, and is that a lot for our program to do that? Am I barking up the wrong tree? And he said, it's not about the size of the community. It's about the volume of work that you guys do. And no, you're not wrong. You should keep barking up that tree. So we're going to, and I think, you know, a partnership with Grow Green is going to be part of that growth for us. And
barking doesn't hurt.
No. Yeah, it is.
You always got to keep doing it.
That's right. Yeah.
All right, so let's kind of gear off of the work aspect here.
Cool.
So, I mean, I don't know. I was going to ask you a question. What do you do in your spare time? Because, man, it sounds like you're just busy a lot. City Council on Main Street and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And you've got six kids.
Six kids. We stay busy. You know, we're another volunteer thing we do is called Boost. And it's we're in year 7 of this thing called Boost. And it stands for bringing optimism and opportunity to students and teachers. So this is essentially a nonprofit group of volunteers that, you know, kind of like a PTO type of thing where it's supporting teachers, supporting educators, raising funds for teachers to be able to do extra stuff. And so we've got that coming up here. Actually, this weekend, a big fundraiser event. 6 years of that, we've raised over $350,000 for our teachers and students. So it gives them an opportunity.
What does that go towards?
Great question. There's a couple of small things we do, at least dollar-wise small. The beginning of the year, they get a card with some money. Every teacher gets it. They can use it however they want. And then around Valentine's Day, they get another. They get some, we call them chamber bucks, to use however they want. Just to know they're loved, to support it, you know. But essentially, the big thing is if they've got something that's maybe outside their normal budget, stop spending your own money, for one. Because teachers notoriously do that because they love what they do. But if it's a special field trip, or if it's, you know, like the music department got mandolins, and the elementary PE teacher bought bikes to teach kids how to use bikes and use them responsibly. And every single grade has been impacted. Every teacher has got stuff that they've asked for, basically. So it goes towards just, you know, raising the bar for teachers to be able to provide things they maybe they normally wouldn't be able to. But the big boost bash we have, where there's 250 people there, part of that is really showing a lot of love to the teachers, and that's one of my favorite parts of it.
Cool.
It's not just the money, it's feeling supported.
So my mom and dad are both teachers, so I love that. Anything you can do for teachers is great.
100%. I mean, sit in a classroom for a half hour and you'll leave there just astounded by the amount of, that was one of my favorite things, is coming into classrooms and being a naturalist over here. And Carol's got some fantastic teachers at both school districts, is there a more important job out there, really, you know?
Yeah.
So supporting them in any way we can, but that's one of the things I do. But I love just we moved here this last fall, so any of my free time really should go towards doing stuff with the house. We live right across the street from where the tennis courts and soon to be pickleball courts are. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna really be getting into pickleball.
So, you better get the pickleball rackets out.
That's right. We need to get some of those.
Last thing before we head out here, because we got to get going. But I had to ask you about this one. Coming up, and I've been hearing about this the last couple of months, cicadas. I knew you were the guy to ask, because I don't know how much you follow up on your naturalist stuff right now, but they're saying it's like a massive year for cicadas. Maybe not in Iowa, our area, but around like Missouri and some of that area. They're talking about trillions.
Because is this where it's like two different hatches coming out, right? I haven't read a ton about it, but I did see that this is coming. Is that this summer they're expecting that, right?
Like in June.
Yeah.
So it's like it's coming up fast.
Well, I remember one of the last times this happened, it's like it turned out to be great fishing bait, too. They would just like come land on you like, oh, I'll bait my hook. And it is. There's a meme where it's like, you know, if cicadas can wake up and just start screaming in the morning, I think I should be able to also. And I was just screaming at the world.
But, I heard a wives' tale, too, that once you hear a cicada, it's, what is it, 4 weeks to the nearest frost or 6 weeks to the nearest frost?
I don't know about that one. But, it's kind of like the woolly bear caterpillars and the different color of the bands and all that and the prediction of, the science doesn't really back that up. And so some of those wives' tales are fun. It's whatever, you know, sometimes just be careful with your information. It's still fun to kind of talk about that stuff. Yeah. These different things, when they spend most of their lives underground, right?
The 17 years or something.
Yeah,
like that,
it's wild. And they come out basically to reproduce and scream and that's it. It is a really interesting, so I have no idea what
I just call that Monday.
Yeah. I don't know what the evolutionary purpose is for that, like such long period underground. But the great thing is that there is a reason for everything, even if we don't fully understand it. It's fun to learn about that stuff. So
One of those weird abnormalities that I just had to bring up to you.
It is a really fun one. But that's what's great about it is, like, you know, as a very curious person, there's like, it's always, I still see stuff. My brother has lived around the world as a master scuba diver. So anytime I see neat underwater stuff, I'm always sharing with him and he's teaching me stuff. And, you know, one of the things, he went on a Christmas bird count with me one December down at Springbrook State Park. And when he was back from, I think, living on Australia at the moment. And we're talking about saw-white owls, which are about the size of imagine a camouflage pop can hiding in cedar trees. This is how hard they are to find, okay? And I said, man, they're so hard. And I was explaining that. And he's like, and not even being sarcastic, he's like, yeah, that's kind of how seahorses are. They're hard.
Right.
They're small and hard to find.
Yeah,
but
they're
reliable once you know where they are. So, but nature is great. Yeah, it's fantastic.
I tell you what, we've been talking for a while now. I had a whole sheet of questions. I didn't ask a single one of them.
Did you get through two or three of those?
Hardly any of them, I don't think.
So, I'm happy to come back anytime, John.
Absolutely, anytime, Matt. It was great catching up with you. Yeah. I appreciate it, and thanks for coming on.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
See, it's Must Know People. It's Matt Wietrich.